It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We're off and running. Yes, I was gone Monday and Tuesday. Family stuff. I'll be gone again tomorrow and Friday, traveling up to D.C. But then back on Monday for what should be as close to a normal week as, well, I mean, normal's only a setting on a dryer, right? Yes, absolutely. But I got to, this family stuff, got to be gone. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is a midweek, cram everything into one broadcast kind of an evening. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, among other things. The little old blue-haired ladies are absolutely astounded with me. Even though I got knocked down last week, gut-wise, and even though I'm just eating the bejesus out of yogurt these days, I've put the smoker to, I put the little acorn to the test. Six racks of ribs, all the trimmings, and two pork butts, all to take with me for the dinner after the ceremony on Friday. And that little device just continues to impress. Then I get a big kick out of doing it too. So hopefully it'll be as enjoyed as much as I enjoyed preparing it. It is the 20th day of June 2018. Thanks for the note to Lee in New York, who noticed a mention of it today. Whether you realize it or not, is West Virginia Day. Yes. Today, 155 years ago, West Virginia became a state, and it's all been downhill from there. But the impulses were good. They wanted the westernmost portion of the state of Virginia didn't feel like it had any real dog in the hunt in terms of secession. Slavery was not as widespread here as it was over in the Old Dominion, whose slavery was so horrifying that William Seward, trying to travel south, got down through Virginia and turned around and went home because witnessing slavery in the South was past sickening to him and his wife, and they couldn't tolerate it. This was before the Civil War, and they just went back. They went back to New York because it was absolutely unbearable. But the western part of the state didn't have the reliance upon slavery that the other part of the state did, and so. An effort was begun as soon as Virginia had seceded from the Union to secede from Virginia. And it all came to fruition when West Virginia's statehood was signed into law by Abraham Lincoln on January the 20th, 1863. It's easy for me to remember the age of my state because it's exactly 100 years older. Not exactly, but it's in terms of years, not months or days. It's 100 years older than I am. So, happy birthday to my poor, benighted state. And benighted it is. Because, like I said, it's been downhill since statehood. Because no sooner had this state become a separate political entity than the predators moved in and began to dismantle it piecemeal. It wasn't too long after the close of the Civil War that, well, coal had already been discovered here, but figuring out how to exploit it was the real problem. It was a matter of getting railroads in and being able to transport the coal that was mined. And by a little after the turn of the 20th century, there was barely a tree left growing in this state. It had been almost entirely deforested for purposes of building of cross ties for railroads and building all the infrastructure that went with the railroads and the nascent coal industry. And this state has been the butt of jokes and a carcass to be preyed upon ever since. But right or left, just about anybody you will find who lives here will tell you that they love this place like they could never love any other. It's weird. I can't explain it, but that's what the place does to you. And I'm no different from anybody else. So we take a moment, we hillbillies, to think back across our generations on the 20th day of June every year and marvel at how we got here. And for some of us who've had family here for 9, 10, 11, 12 generations, to marvel at the absolute indomitable spirit that has made it possible to survive here. And so here I sit with another, you know, we've passed the torch, as it were, to another generation, and another generation beyond that is now in the growing. Fifth grade, fourth grade, and second grade now. And the question becomes, where will West Virginia go in the future, and whatever will we do when they finally do get all of the coal? Because the tendency is to leave this place high and dry. Or like a John fleeing out the window in the night, leaving the person he has used sticky, broken, confused. Same, in many ways. But it's West Virginia Day. We had a beautiful day for West Virginia Day. I spent a lot of it outside around the smoker, making sure that the temperature stayed at a delightful 200 to 250 degrees Fahrenheit. And it was successful. The slabs are all off of the grill now, and it's cooling down, and they're wrapped up in foil and ready to go, and they're in the cooler. And even as I speak, Agnes is packing the car because, well, I'm back here. And we'll take off in the morning and head up to D.C. and have a nice time with extended family, even though the circumstances are sad. Again, when someone lives a life of 94 years and ends it as well as it ended for my aunt, any commemoration has to, almost by definition, be one of celebration of the life lived as opposed to an exercise in anguish and grief. But anguish and grief we have aplenty in this country. Oh, God, yes. But before we get into that, I do need to extend some thanks because we have subscribers. And we are way, 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 way ugly deep in a hole. And the subscribers are a big part of how we keep going here. So thanks to Dave at West Mesa. Thank you very kindly indeed. And thank you to Vincent for his subscription. Thank you very much and very kindly to Bernice. Thank you, Bernice. Thank you so very kindly for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks to Carl over in Columbus. Thank you, Carl. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks go out to Angie, who helped us take... We finished the week last week with a 200 and... well, it was in excess of a $200 deficit. We got it down to 205, and Angela, knocked it down to 105. Angela and Eugene, thank you so very much. Thank you so very much indeed for that, because that took a big chunk of the pain away. Thanks to our subscribers, more subscribers, because I've been away for a while. Joseph in Ohio. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you very kindly to Robert in Iowa. Thanks as well go out to our buddy Reinhard, a longtime member of the community and supporter of the program. Thank you, Reinhard, over in Eastern Virginia. Thank you to David in Ohio. And thanks as well to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Mike. With me being away for a while, there's a list. Thanks to Grace in New York. Thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rhode Island. And thanks to Jeff in Oregon. And thanks to... James in Illinois, who heard the call of the deficit and helped knock that down a little bit. Thank you very kindly to Nancy in New York, and to our buddy Gary Laborman in New Mexico. Thank you to Arthur in Phoenix. Thanks, Arthur. Thanks very kindly indeed. Thanks to Glenn in New York. Thank you very kindly to Timothy, also in Arizona. And those are our subscribers for the last few days. Thanks one and all, because you're a big part of why this program remains on the air. Thank you very kindly to Linda in Massachusetts, who contributed this afternoon in appreciation of Dr. Bill and the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. Because of the scheduling mess this week, Dr. Bill was able to at least get one program in. Thank you, Linda. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. It's a big help. And just a few moments ago, thank you very kindly to Henry for helping us knock down the fundraising deficit. It's now at $350. Thank you for taking it down there, Henry. Thank you very much indeed. Nice notes coming in. Thank you to Alma, who says, so thankful you have a program today. I'm tickled pink to be here, too. I don't like being away from the microphone and away from our conversation. I guess I've just sort of become... I'm spoiled. I cherish our opportunities to talk every evening. So thanks for the kind words, Alma. Jim asks, how much of West Virginia fought for the Confederacy percentage-wise? I don't know if that's actually a knowable figure, Jim. The state was split. It was decidedly split. You know how I know it's split? Because some of my ancestors were traitors. Yes, they were. They took up arms against the government of the United States. And some of my ancestors weren't traitors. But the state was very definitely divided. But there was enough of a power base to create the state. And frankly, I get the idea that Abraham Lincoln kind of enjoyed sticking a finger in old Virginia's eye. Because historically, you have to remember that Virginia was among the last states to secede, after which Lincoln worked furiously to keep both Maryland and Kentucky so-called neutrals, but actually still in the Union. West Virginia looks like it does. In other words, West Virginia is the only state in the Union that you can indicate manually by performing an obscene gesture. If you take your right hand and you keep your palm toward you, and you form the middle finger gesture with the other fingers pulled down beside it, and the thumb outstretched, you've roughly got the state of West Virginia. And it looks like that because there was actually a referendum on who wanted to stay and who wanted to leave. And the counties that wanted to leave, the outline of the state of West Virginia is the counties that voted to get the hell away from old Virginia. And, the fact that it was done democratically, by a plebiscite, is impressive to this day. And, of course, I always note that West Virginia Day falls the day before the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. So, with me not here tomorrow. No, it does not look... The state of West Virginia does not look like a scrotum, Asa. Now, quit that. Trying to drag the program down into the gutter, only 17 minutes into it. Daggummit, Asa. What am I going to do with you? Yep. But the solstice is tomorrow, and so the day after tomorrow, every day will begin getting shorter all the way to the winter solstice. But summer is here. Mm-hmm. So enough shilly-shallying about. We got about $350 to raise this evening. It would be nice if we could get, 35 new $10 a month subscribers. That's not going to happen. But it would be nice, one way or the other, if we can just knock that down. That would be tremendously helpful, because it's with absences and me getting sick and stuff, it's been kind of a difficult little month. Bill in Allentown says, when I look at a map of the United States of Merca, there's always been a question in the back of my mind: why didn't they call them North and South Virginia? Never have been able to understand that. Happy West Virginia Day to you and yours. Well, thank you, Bill. Well, over here on the west side of the Allegheny Front, we like to think of ourselves as the other side is Virginia, and we're best Virginia. Best Virginia, yes. So that's another way of looking. There were other names. Vandalia. Vandalia was proposed as a name. I need to get Keith Lilly on the program again and just talk about some of the fun stuff about West Virginia's history that no one knows. Randy in PA says, I get the impression that the state of Delaware is still keeping mum about their role in the Civil War. Well, wouldn't you? So, that's talking about Hoghead in the chat room with a quote from the Cowboy Junkies. I've watched the flat cars take away our timber. I've watched the coal cars steal our rock. And now that we've got nothing left to take, we're told the wheels will stop turning, the whistle stop blowing, these foolish dreams must stop. Thanks, Hoghead. That's moving indeed. Meanwhile, and this is a significant note, and it is an appeal for input from the members of the community, whether you're listening live or whether you're listening via podcast. Your thoughts are welcome. Our buddy Steve in New York writes, when is it time to cut and run? I'm writing to the Horn family for input, says Steve. I'm writing for the collective wisdom that so wonderfully permeates the family community congregation. Please also realize I don't intend this to be an, oh boy, I'm so important, look at me kind of thing. I'm writing about something I've been pondering for a very long time. As I have probably revealed, my partner is in Canada pursuing his PhD. Canadian immigration is such that those with a PhD from a Canadian school can obtain permanent residency in Canada. He and I have discussed where we were going to live once he obtained his PhD and his permanent residency. Originally, the plan was to settle in Canada. Then, after some disappointments with certain aspects of Canadian life and society, we pondered whether we would marry in the U.S. and I could sponsor him. Now, for obvious reasons, me moving there and marrying him to obtain my permanent residency in Canada is probably where we're headed. The Trump years have been awful from day one. However, it seems to me that with state-sponsored kidnapping of children, and that's what it is, we are headed toward full-blooded fascism at light speed. What has really begun to strike me is that there is a significant portion of this country that actually sees this as a positive. The problem is that many on our side can't understand why the Trumpanzees can't see how bad he is. I have a very dear friend of mine here in New York City who routinely asks me why they can't see it. He's a brilliant person, but he's lived in and around New York City and in New England and the Pacific Northwest throughout his life. It is with this in mind that he can't seem to understand me when I tell him that this is exactly what the Trumpanzees want. This is what they voted for. In fact, they probably think it's better than what they voted for. I love how my friend wants to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it's the least bit controversial to say that the Trumpanzees, the base of the GOP, want an authoritarian, particularly a Christian authoritarian government. Can you say Gilead? And I will add to what Steve, the comparison Steve makes there with something Dr. Bill was talking about earlier today. Can you say Omelas? Maybe we'll get to that. It is with this long preface that I write, says Steve, as I've seen my opportunity to leave this country. I've been wondering more and more if I should. It occurs to me that as an educated person, as a person with a law degree and background, that the answer to the question, when is it time to cut and run, has become harder and harder to answer. I can't help but feel I have a responsibility to stay and fight. I can't help but feel that it would be immoral for me to leave and not fight for those not in my position, without my educated and professional status. However, at what point do I answer that question with the answer, now? Now it is time to cut and run. At what point do I acknowledge that this country, with all of its sins and transgressions, is now, in fact, lost? At what point is my leaving no longer abandonment of those whom I feel a responsibility to stand up for? In closing, Steve says, thanks, Horn family, for your wisdom. So send me an email or send me an internet. It's not a big, it's not a series of tubes. Send me an email if you've got any responses that you think would be beneficial for Steve. And the other thing, I just want to point out, because it's a language thing, to cut and run. I remember as far back as the Reign of Error under Dim Leader, when we were talking about the fact that we should never have been in Iraq in the first place and we needed to get the hell out yesterday, the Republican response was, well, we can't just cut and run, and they'd use that phrase, cut and run, as if it was something dirty. It is not. It is my understanding, and perhaps our buddy Tom in the Bay Area can correct me, but to cut and run is a nautical term. And it has to do with what one does when one is in extremely foul weather that runs the risk, stormy seas, runs the risk of perhaps capsizing or sinking the vessel. And your best bet is to cut the sheets and run before the wind, or run with the storm tide or whatever. I'm not a sailor. But to cut and run is an attempt to avert disaster. To cut and run is an attempt to save oneself. And so, if there was any inclination on your part to see that phrase cut and run as some sort of a pejorative, I would heartily encourage you not to think that way. But I think Steve's note is a good introduction to the evening as we pursue it, since I've been gone for a couple of days and we haven't been day by day following these various and sundry horrors. I think that's a good place to begin, because, you know, especially after, after people heard, for instance, the audio of children in the baby gulag weeping and crying for their mothers like this, and their daddies like this.
¿De dónde son ustedes?
¿Y tú?
Guatemala.
No llores. Vas a llegar con... Mira, ella te va a explicar y te va a ayudar. ¿Cierto, consulado?
¿Qué va a pasar con su consulado?
El papá. Papá.
Yo
con mi tía, por lo menos, para que después llegue.
At least, can I go with my aunt? I want her to come. I want my aunt to come so she can take me to her house. The Border Patrol scum says she'll help you call your aunt if you have the number so that you can talk to your aunt. I have her number. Papa, papa. You know, considering the language being spoken, you can almost travel in time and hear those babies making the same sounds and the same cries, papa, papa, papa. Say, perhaps after the fascist bombing of Guernica during the Spanish Civil War, in which that town was slaughtered wholesale. But it's just been a steady stream of outrage and a steady stream of evidence that this country is in worse shape than we even know. Children crying in the night, photographs of little children changing smaller children's diapers because there are not sufficient staff to deal with it, and this whole damn thing was put in place by a vicious old Klansman and his son of a Klansman boss for nothing more than to exact a form of political punishment on the weakest and most vulnerable of those of us on this planet. you know, and since it's Wednesday and everything, in direct violation of everything that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, ever said. Fortunately, I did get to deconstruct Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third's reference to Romans 13, and we all understand that he made that reference because it runs in his blood. So we at least understand some of that, but we've got to... And we went from the crying children to the knowledge via the Associated Press yesterday evening that we are running, because it just sounds more appropriate in the original, we are running Kindernwagen. Yeah. Children's prison camps for the little ones of tender years. We got three so far. I suggested earlier that we should name them after Trump's kid and grandkids. Number one can be Kinderlager Baron. And then name them after one of Ivanka's kids and one of Don Jr.'s kids. You know, just because I'm sentimental that way. Clarity says he's our Pinochet, Trump. He's our Franco. Dare I say he's our wannabe Putin puppet playboy. He's all of those things, and he is also evil, and he is mad. I presume most of you by now have seen the video from yesterday of him concluding his remarks to a teabagger business group. More on that. I've got audio. At the end of which, he walked over and hugged the flag. I'd say we're about maybe 10 brain cells away from him masturbating with it at this point. He's gone fishing in a dry creek bed. If the Republic were functioning, the 25th Amendment would have been triggered eons ago. But I think this goes to the gravamen of Steve's inquiry. First, you have to come to the conclusion, as I have, that this country is irretrievably broken. Emphasis on the word irretrievably. It's not that it won't get better, it's that it can't get better. By now, I'm sure you're well aware that Julius Geezer, earlier today, allegedly signed an executive order rescinding the family separation policy, right?
Thank you very much. We're signing an executive order. I consider it to be a very important executive order. It's about keeping families together while at the same time being sure that we have a very powerful, very strong border, and border security will be equal, if not greater, than previously. So we're going to have strong, very strong borders, but we're going to keep the families together. I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated.
You dirty fucker. You instituted the policy, but you didn't like the sight or the feeling. You evil old bastard. Jesus H. Christ. But here's the thing. So he's pausing. He's not ending it. He's pausing it. So that means arguably no more families will be split up, but there are 2,500 children already in our baby gulags. And God only knows how we're going to reunite those families. And God may not, because, of course, you know, God ain't real. And it's only a pause. The hostage taker has stopped taking hostages to see if maybe the original hostage taking had the desired effect. But the policy being put in place now doesn't allow families time to prepare an asylum claim. See, that's the other part of all of this. And it's hard to keep track, and I know it is, and I'm not going to do an effective job of it, and no one is. But something on the order of 91% of the arrests at the border since the institution of this policy of choice by this regime, as announced by United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, back in April, 91% of those charged have been first offense charges of illegally entering the country. Where never before did we charge people making an asylum claim before the claim could be adjudicated. But now we do. And you can only make an asylum claim at an official border checkpoint. But they closed those. So anywhere else a person makes an asylum claim, the asylum claim is deemed illegal. And that's how we got to where we are. And this is without addressing the question of why people are leaving Guatemala and Honduras in the first place. And that in its own right is probably 3 hours at a minimum to begin to delve into and explain. But the short answer is that it has to do with the CIA's meddling in Guatemala in the 1950s. And it has to do with so-called free trade. And it has to do with the campesinos being driven off land that they've been working for 10,000 fucking years. And it has to do with the rise of drug cartels who feed a bottomless, insatiable market for drugs in the United States. You know, we talk about the bad old days of Prohibition. The crime wasn't only on the United States side. It wasn't just what Al Capone was doing in Chicago. There was crime across the border in Canada where the hooch was being picked up and brought into the United States. Prohibitions of substances almost always come with the creation of a criminal element market for the substance. And yes, for years now, because of policies of the United States, desperate mamas and desperate daddies have been scrounging up what little they could, putting it into the hands of their children and saying, run. Go now. Send us a postcard to let us know you're alive. We will never stop loving you. We may never see you again, but we will never stop loving you. And for some, the postcards never come. The letters never come. And this is the reality of the United States of America in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, when really we should be past a lot of this. But we aren't. And this is an America where someone who is very likely a millionaire can sneer and deride children fleeing for their lives.
Their strategy: don't let people think about immigration, don't let them know any facts. Anchor baby, there's nothing racial, there's nothing sexual. It means you anchor the child here, and then the child can bring in all the relatives. It's a boating metaphor. So, yeah, they're upset about it because it allows people to discuss immigration.
And then chain migration.
And chain migration. But look, back then, Posner said, as long as you... incentivize people to come here from south of the border, they're going to keep dying, crossing through the desert, sure, as long as you keep that magnet on. And what greater magnet than citizenship, than Medicare, Medicaid, free health care? Yeah, that's why people voted for Wall. And I would also say one other thing, these child actors weeping and crying on all the other networks 24/7 right now. Do not fall for it, Mr. President.
Child actors. We grandfathered Ann Coulter out of this program, grandmothered, I suppose, a long time ago. But I decided to play that clip this evening just because she is such a perfect exemplar of how manifestly evil this country has become. And more of us than most of us are willing to admit. Child actors. Like this.
Okay.
Hello, papa.
Voy a llamar a mi tía para que después de comer me venga a recoger.
Cuando agarre la comida, yo voy a venir para que le...
Ay, no, papá.
Tengo el número yo de memoria, 34.
Hello, papá. Papá.
Child actors. There's not a hell hot enough for Ann Coulter. I can't think of something awful enough for someone as wretchedly, wickedly evil as she is. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe drop her in the middle of a slum in Tegucigalpa and let her explain conservatism to a cartel or three. But this is who and where we are, and Steve, you are not to be... this is not just solely addressed. There's a lot of people carrying on this conversation right now. I had a note from Les a little bit ago. For Steve's question, November 6th is the beginning of the end. If Democrats don't take over Congress and immediately get on impeaching the Fuhrer, then it's time to abandon ship. This topic has been discussed in my home as well since we've gotten to concentration camps for babies without more than a collective shrug from a large portion of this shithole country. And I don't know what anybody else thought fascism was going to look like coming here. But your high quality talented fascists never bring fascism in fell swoops. It comes in bits and pieces, a little bit at a time. And you get get an opportunity to get used to it. You can't do anything about it. You know, the election's not till November. I mean, there's nothing that can be done right now. We just got to wait till November. I mean, granted, there may be 10,000 infants in the baby gulag by then, but, well, you know, we've got a constitutional government here, Fred, and we've got to operate under constitutional principles. To which I call bullshit. The fact of the matter is, and I gave a great deal of thought to this, not one person in the midst of all the hand-wringing and all the crying and all the pearl-clutching and all the shock and all the horror, and I'm not discounting any of it because every bit of it is real. But not once have I heard anyone in a position of power, not once have I heard anyone with a broad media reach say that this is awful enough to warrant the immediate removal of the president from office for high crimes and misdemeanors. I have not heard one single person say it. No one at ABC, no one at CBS, no one in the New York Times, no one at NBC. They are documenting this nightmare, and in many instances doing the very best job they know how to do in documenting it. But documentation goes only so far. At some point in time, we have to talk about remedies. At some point in time, we have to talk about how to stop this. And I'm scared to death that now that Geezer Disgustus has signed what purports to be an executive order, that he's going to say, well, see, I didn't like the sight or the feeling of children being separated from their families, and because I'm a humanitarian, I signed this executive order, but we're still going to have strong borders. We got to build the wall. That the for-profit media that struggles with attention deficit disorder anyway will say, whew, and, you know, boom, it'll be off the radar. The fact of the matter is the President of the United States, conspiring with the Attorney General of the United States, committed crimes against humanity, including but not limited to kidnapping. And there is no decent, there is no moral, there is no ethical answer to any of this except to say that Donald J. Trump must be removed from office as immediately as legal processes will allow. And Les, I'm not getting after you for saying November the 6th, my friend. I'm not. But we're at a point where we're past waiting for elections. Waiting for elections that may very well be gerrymandered beyond reach in the first place. I submit to you, and this isn't a Democrat thing, okay? Most of the Democrats were clear on at least trying to pass a piece of legislation, with a couple of notable exceptions. But I think it's safe to say that the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives would vote as a block for impeachment. And so the problem becomes a Republican problem. It is the absence of morals. It is the absence of ethics. It is the absence of even a passing understanding of fundamental, basic human decency that gets us to where we are. If I see another bold Republican say, this is not who we are, I am going to puke in my shoes. Because this, by God, is who we are, because this is happening and no one is trying to stop it by stopping it at its source. A piece of legislation is not going to do. The only thing that's going to save this country at this point in time is the removal of Donald J. Trump from office. And a sufficient amount of the fear of God being put into Mike Pence so that he won't try it again. And then, just a little bit before air, another piece of outrage hit the wires. From the Center for Investigative Reporting, which does magnificent work, by Matt Smith and Ara Bogado. Dateline today. President Donald Trump's zero-tolerance policy is creating a zombie army of children forcibly injected with medications that make them dizzy, listless, obese, and even incapacitated, according to legal filings that show immigrant children in U.S. custody subdued with powerful psychiatric drugs. Children held at Shiloh Treatment Center, a government contractor south of Houston that houses immigrant minors, described being held down and injected, according to federal court filings. The lawsuit alleges that children were told they would not be released to see their parents or see their parents unless they took medication and that they were only receiving vitamins. No, we're just going to send you to the showers. Oh, and by the way, we've done that too while I was gone. No, honey, we're just going to go and give you a bath. And then the bath time's over, and Mommy and Daddy are gone. Parents and the children themselves told attorneys the drugs rendered them unable to walk, afraid of people, wanting to sleep constantly, according to affidavits filed April 23rd in U.S. District Court in California. One mother said her child fell repeatedly, hitting her head, and ended up in a wheelchair. A child described trying to open a window and being hurled against a door by a Shiloh supervisor, who then choked her until she fainted. The supervisor told me I was going to get medication injection to calm me down. Two staff grabbed me, and the doctor gave me the injection despite my objection and left me there on the bed. Another child recounted being made to take pills in the morning, at noon, and night. The child said the staff told me that some of the pills are vitamins because they think I need to gain weight. The vitamins changed about two times, and each time I feel different. Shiloh is among 71 companies that receive funds from the federal government to house and supervise immigrant children deemed unaccompanied minors. And ever since the policy went into place in April, they're all deemed unaccompanied minors. That's the way the Catch-22 works. You take their children away and say, look, they're unaccompanied. Oh, they're unaccompanied minors. At Reveal, which is a subset or subsection of the Center for Investigative Reporting, at Reveal's request, forensic psychiatrist Mark J. Mills assessed materials from 420 pages of children's medical records and statements filed in California federal court this April. Dr. Mills said, you don't have to be a rocket scientist here. It looks like they're trying to control agitation and aggressive behavior with antipsychotic drugs, said Mills, who practices in the Washington, D.C. area and was an expert witness for a lawsuit in 2008 that stopped the federal government from forcibly administering antipsychotic drugs to deportees. You don't need to administer these kinds of drugs unless someone is plucking out their eyeball or some such. The facility should not use these drugs to control behavior. That's not what antipsychotics should be used for. That's what the old Soviet Union used to do. Gee, wonder where we got the idea. One child, was prescribed 10 different shots and pills, including, and those familiar with psychiatric medications will recognize this list, including the antipsychotic drugs Latuda, Geodon, and Olanzapine, the Parkinson's medication Benztropine, the seizure medications Clonazepam and Valproex, the nerve pain medication and antidepressant Duloxetine, and the cognition enhancer Guanfacine. Maribel Bernardez first suspected her son was being drugged at the Shiloh facility when she saw a video sent by his caseworker via WhatsApp. He was completely hypnotized and lethargic, she told Reveal. Bernardez, now reunited with her son in New Orleans and seeking asylum from Honduras, provided Reveal with records showing her son was held at the Shiloh facility for 6 months. He was 9 when he landed at Shiloh in November after being referred for what staff considered psychological issues. Medical records show he was administered psychotropic drugs at Shiloh. She told Reveal, Maribel Bernardez did, that she did not sign any consent form and that she repeatedly objected. Asked for comment, neither Shiloh nor the Office of Refugee Resettlement has responded. Meanwhile, it turns out Shiloh has a reputation for mistreating children, but we give them a government contract anyway. In December 2014, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee called for Shiloh to be shut down, citing reports from the Houston Chronicle of physical violence, unreasonable and excessive use of physical restraints, administering emergency medications without notice to governmental authorities, and several deaths of minor children while in custody. Deaths. In a facility. I hope Ron sent me an email saying I hadn't mentioned any of this. Well, I was just working my way around to it, Ron. Shiloh, by the way, has been paid some $5.6 million by you, me, we, the people, trying to form that more perfect union in the last year alone. The Department of Health and Human Services kept sending children and funds to Shiloh, totaling more than $19 million in payments even after Representative Sheila Jackson Lee called for its closure. Every one of the 20 or so children who were interviewed, all of them had been medicated. Asked how such drugs and dosages would make children feel, Dr. Mills said, "They feel like shit. They feel like they've given up their own control. The long-term complications are weight gain and developing adult-onset diabetes. These drugs are not benign." No. So, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know quite how to. I don't know if there is an answer to Steve's question. Labor man says, not Canada, Steve. Old Scrump hates Canada. May nuke him at any time. Go to North Korea or become a Ruski. Trump loves them. And he says, but being serious, you're not alone in how you feel. We're rapidly becoming a total disgrace. Please stay and help us with the fight. Silent R. Lamar says, the time to cut and run is when and if Trump wins a second term, all shit aside. Hell, I might have to renew my passport. Yeah. Ron in Raleigh points out, the Trump regime is shot through with some of the filthiest, vilest people imaginable. Simon R. Lamar reminds us, now about when, think of blacks on the auction block. Yeah. Lee in New York City responding to Steve says, I do not have an answer for a personal choice, but I admit that I have had similar thoughts. The choice is always a balance between what keeps you here and the mobility to go to better. I look at a nation that does not keep allies and ignores treaties. That damages a nation for years to come. The U.S. is not trustworthy with any statement made by Trump. The zero-tolerance policy is a demonstration of cruelty toward immigrants by people who trace their history to other nations. If it were not blindly hypocritical, it might be funny. The only wrong answer to should I cut and run, says Lee, is yesterday. Um, Ron in Raleigh says, not a nickel's worth of difference. We often wonder who the people were in Germany that were the guards at Treblinka, Bergen-Belsen, or Auschwitz. The people employed at the facilities that hold the children are cut from the same cloth. The sad thing is, nothing will be done to them. Can we impanel a new Nuremberg trial? No, because you see, we as a nation have not been humbled. And there is absolutely no one on planet Earth to call this outlaw regime to account. Now, if in fact China stopped all shipments to the United States, if in fact every country with whom we trade stopped sending stuff here, including food, we don't even grow all our own food anymore. We probably would be hard-pressed to feed ourselves at this point in time. If we were made a pariah state, like North Korea, then maybe there would be some leverage. But everything changed with the explosions at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And no one can hold us to account. Theresa May in England can clutch her pearls. Angela Merkel can wring her hands. Emmanuel Macron can smack his forehead and say, Sacreliac. Justin Trudeau, hey, congratulations, Canadians. You guys get legal weed soon? You'll need it. But no one can do a damn thing with us. We are a rogue on the world stage. It's that bad. It really is that bad. And given the fact that none, as I mentioned before, given the fact that there are no people in power calling for the immediate removal of Donald Trump from office, well, all it means is that apparently we either don't think there is anything on this earth that can be bad enough to warrant that, or that even if it is that bad, we do not have the courage to speak the obvious. I mean, sure, make no mistake. There are sound bites aplenty. There's lots of shocked. I am shocked, I tell you, shocked to find out there is gambling going on here. And most of the people who are shocked and disgusted are, of course, Democrats. Over on the Republican side, the latest weasel wiggle room is to say, well, I don't necessarily approve of it, but you know who I'm mad at? The parents. They knowed what they was in for, and they brung their youngins anyway. Why couldn't they stay right there in their home countries and just get machine gunned to death by the cartel in the middle of the night and go to heaven and live with Jesus? Here's Eric Swalwell talking to Wolf Blitzer. Maybe, at some point, someday. There we go.
Keep families together, but they will be together in detention while parents face criminal prosecution. Is that the solution you were hoping for?
No, Wolf, and good evening. You know, this policy... Of breaking the bond between parents and children and putting children in cages is inhumane, and the president was right to stop that policy. But let's not give him a medal for starting the fire and then bringing the fire hose. The best thing we can do is to stay loud as American citizens, because I think that's what moved him to do the right thing, but also to make sure that we are not indefinitely detaining families, and that we devote resources so we can adjudicate these asylum cases as quickly as possible, and also that the ports of entry are open, because right now we've heard too many cases of people going to the right channels, to the ports of entry, being denied, and then they have to illegally cross, and then that's used as the reason to separate them. So there's a lot of fixes we need, Wolf. And finally, let's understand the root of these issues, which is that if people are fleeing where they know is home and the language that they know, it's because of the dire circumstances there. And let's make sure that we are working with other countries to address that.
The executive order that the president just signed directs the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, to modify what's called the Flores Agreement, which bans the federal government from holding children in detention longer than 20 days. Could this lead to children, together with their parents, being detained indefinitely?
This could lead to family internment camps, Wolf, and that is what we do not want to see. And the way to avoid that is to still follow that Flores decision, which is a humane decision that does not want people in camps like this indefinitely, but also to put the judges down there to allow the Border Patrol agents to process the evidence and have ports that are open so that we can make decisions as to whether there are lawful asylum cases or not, and allow the families to stay or to go. But indefinitely keeping them there is no better than separating children from their parents.
Yeah, I mean, all that's true. But there's no real remedy in it, and there's no recognition that this is a problem created for very real real racist purposes. It was kind of interesting. Earlier today, I saw a news story saying that American Airlines had asked the government to not use their flights for transporting these kidnapped children. And within minutes of that, I saw another tweet from somebody saying, well, I'm sitting here and I'm watching a group of kidnapped children be put on an American Airlines flight to Houston. American has asked, United has said they want no part of it. Frontier Airlines has said, no, not us. And United, good old United, well, their CEO, Oscar Munoz, said, the family separations policy is in deep conflict with our company's values. We've contacted federal officials to inform them that they should not transport immigrant children on United aircraft who've been separated from their parents. But then there was the photo. So, there you go. Let me check back in email-wise. I used grandmothered, says Kevin in Colorado Springs. No, Bob, I'd suggest you rename it Grand Satan'd out of the program. Much more appropriate. I'll have to remember that. Meanwhile, Scott out in San Diego says, call me a cockeyed optimist, but I think it would be a much better world if all the batshit crazy politicians were locked up in cages and kids were in charge of things. Play nicely with each other, children. Steve in New York with a response says, more wisdom from the Horn family. There are a number of much older folks in the family. Is this really as bad as it seems to me? I'd love to hear from other more senior Horn family members if this is something they've seen before. I've wondered, by the way, says Steve, what Mr. Stress would be saying. I know. I had that thought myself. I wondered what my dad would be saying. George Takei, who seems the ever youthful Lieutenant Sulu. Pointed out that he suffered in a Japanese internment camp during World War II. But he said, this, what we're doing is far worse. He said, I at least was never separated from my family. Steve says, Ontario, Trump did something that's not been seen in Canada in a very long time. The leader of the Conservatives in Ontario, formerly the Progressive Conservatives, who just became premier, publicly came out in full support of Prime Minister Trudeau regarding the U.S.-Canada trade war. Unheard of. I have a feeling we will see many shocking things. Matt in San Francisco says, years. Look how long it took us to recover from Bush. That shit was regular Republican shit they always do. This shit is an entirely new level. Look how much has been destroyed in just a little over a year. I don't think we recover from this one without being brought to our knees, either financially or militarily. Only when we have lost everything will the people finally awaken to what took place. The only problem is, by then, it'll be too late. And that's my fear, man. Something I said, oddly enough, ironically enough, 2-3 weeks back, if you want to talk about what it's going to take to fix America, these are conversations we need to be having with 10-year-olds. Because the 40-year-olds don't have enough time to fix it, and the 50-year-olds and the 60-year-olds and the 70-year-olds do not. I mean, we can all participate, we can do what we can do when the time comes that we begin putting shit back together again, but we do not have the time to fix it. This may be a problem for generations unborn. The idea of the United States was that every generation would work to make things a little bit better. But this is a matter of a generation unborn unscrewing what the maggots have screwed all the way down to the floor. And here's another one of the problems that goes with all of this. Most of the maggots don't even believe this is happening. They have been thoroughly conditioned. Here we are, 18 months into the Trump regime, and they've been thoroughly conditioned by hearing the phrase fake news, which is just an American euphemism in English for the Nazi phrase Lügenpresse. They're so thoroughly conditioned that they absolutely refuse to think that any of this is real. By the way, there's going to be a Clavering rally in Duluth, Minnesota tonight. It will be sickening. Katie Rogers of the New York Times is there. She tweeted earlier, common theme, a Trump supporter in Duluth, one of many waiting in a long line outside tonight's rally location, just told me she has compassion for separated families, but ultimately believes that the detainment center photos and videos are fake and photoshopped. Trump himself has said the children have been coached on what to say. And there's story after story, because, of course, we all the for-profit media always runs out to talk to the hard-working white folks you get the idea, you know, because of their economic anxiety. And what they find out is that those hardworking white people think this is entirely made up. Fake news. Fake news. There's been two or three a day while I've been gone of these sorts of things. Let's check in with the fine folks over at CNN on this story. You might want to get the hockey puck.
Arizona, you can find plenty of good food. What you won't find, especially among Trump fans, is sympathy for immigrant families separated at the border.
These people that we have coming across the border illegally are breaking the rules. Oh, I have no feelings for them at all.
Despite the images of children torn from their parents or the sounds of kids crying in a detention center, folks here back the president completely.
It's not about Mexicans. That's what everybody is so angry about. It's not. I don't care if you're from Canada. I don't care if you're from where. You just can't come into this state and reach. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain.
You think that people are living off of the state
Absolutely. But
not doing it legally?
Absolutely. And I think it's bull****.
You hear a lot of anger and a lot of the president's own arguments, especially that many of the immigrants are actually criminals posing as parents.
Now, when you have a bad guy coming across, kidnapping a kid, and trying to come across, I don't buy that.
How many of these do you think could be bad guys?
I don't really know, but there's a lot of people being hurt by bad guys coming into this country. A lot of people.
Actually, that isn't true, but it is what these Trump voters believe. Madeline Carroll doesn't like CNN, and she doesn't like the way the media, she says, is trying to make her feel guilty.
Quit trying to make us feel teary-eyed for the children. Yes, I love children a great deal, but to me, it's up to the parents to do things rightfully and legally.
You support the president 100%.
Correct.
Not all Trump's...
suffice to say, the old lady there was an old white lady. So... gives you an idea. Note coming in from Andy the Angry Jew. Facebook post today, while they're kidnapping kids, this is what they're doing to you. 50 years of right-wing bullshit shaming people who want what they earned. The inherent evil behind these old white men is beyond shocking. The end game, make more poor people. Nothing's changed since the Civil War, the Holocaust, or the Civil Rights Movement of the 1960s. This is the first time I was ever happy my mother is dead. What are we prepared to do to prevent them from rounding up the next group of people? 62 years old. No, says Andy. We've jumped the shark. A philosophical question coming from Brother Deacon Asa. If everything on TV is fake news, then how does your average Trumpansy scumbag know that Trump is actually president of the United States? Maybe all of that inauguration bullshit in 2017 was all made up in theater for TV. Cognitive dissonance much? Oh, no, because... No, see, but he told them so. Yeah, he told them so. So, 20 minutes past the hour, and I've been filibobstering for a while. We've still got about $350 to raise this evening, and it would be nice to raise it before I hit the road, just so that when we come back Monday, you know, we're not there at like $550 or something. And thanks to Henry for getting us started. Hey, Clarity. Oh, Clarity.
There. Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you.
I had to turn on my mic. You know, it's kind of that way.
You know, it's that or stand outside and scream. And I've tried it. It doesn't work real well.
Anyway, I just threw this together in about the last 5 minutes. Well, no, actually, before I call, so 15 minutes. Don't look so sad. You voted for Clinton. Just be grateful they haven't lined us up and shot us. We can blame the Democrats or Bernie Sanders. There's no time to count the swastikas that they're burning. Send your dough to Head On Live now. Leave the big bucks for the Justice Democrat. Hear the tearing up of the pieces of the document that's dying. Make believe it can happen here tomorrow. These are those times. These are those times.
Oh, well done. Well done indeed.
Yeah.
Was that based on For the Good Times?
Yeah, Ray Price.
That's what I thought.
The other thing I just want to bring up, it's weird sometimes on CBC, you talk about Ontario, but yesterday on their World News Report, they interviewed Melania Trump's immigration attorney. And of course, you know, whenever they'd ask what he thought about what Trump was doing, he said, well, I can't really comment on that because, you know, confidentiality and professional ethics, whatever he was speaking from. But he said that I know Melania, and I know she's a very sincere and compassionate person. And I don't think she can have the influence on the president. But that's just weird because sometimes, you know, they...
Well, apparently she dropped the dime on Peter Fonda today. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, Peter Fonda, son of Henry Fonda, baby brother of Jane Fonda, father of Bridget Fonda, got really wrought today and suggested that maybe... a little boron should be put in a dog cage somewhere in one of these detention centers. And the next thing you know, the Secret Service was on the case. And apparently had a little chat with Mr. Fonda.
Well, he has a very old FBI file, as you may or may not remember.
I can imagine he might, yes.
He's Hanoi Jane's little brother, big brother.
Baby brother.
And big brother. And, of course, you know, it's guilt by association. And because, you know, he has a name and notoriety, it carries more weight than if you or I were musing about, you know, something that, you know, might suggest that something, you know. So, in order to keep them from visiting our place, like I think I told you early on, one of my best friends was calling the White House comment line, and when they had Fast and Furious or whatever it was there on the border, you know, the big scam saying that Obama was giving weapons to the Mexican gangs and they were coming across the border and shooting up our agents. Yeah, right. Well, anyway, my friend called the White House line, and they sent out two FBI Secret Service agents to interview them to decide if they were going to, you know, take him with them or let him stay there, you know. So they do take those things very seriously. They were pissed that they had to drive 3 hours from the airport to interview my friend.
Well, as far as in my book, melanoma as well as Ivanka are both feckless.
Yeah, they're not really what I would look up to as a feminine model of. No, they don't exemplify. You know, they're plastic, fantastic, beautiful. Don't get me wrong, but I think.
And doesn't melanoma, even though she's 50-ish, doesn't she qualify as an anchor baby since she's the one that made it possible for her mommy and daddy to come over from Transylvania or where the hell ever?
You know, it's funny how the anchor baby thing is a lot shorter with people that are brown, where people have been sneaking into this country. I saw one thing, their immigration document said that they knew somebody in upstate New York, and that's all they needed, that they knew somebody and they let them come into the country. But that was 115 years ago.
Yeah, right, yeah. So just by way of a little bit of happy talk, how was last weekend's gig?
Oh, it was really good. We worked on a demo, and I can send you it when we get it mastered. But we needed something live to use for promotional purposes, and we didn't have anything that was decent professionally done. So, and we're getting it for a tenth of what it would cost if we would have went into an actual studio.
Beautiful.
But once again, the Hermiston School District came through for us and let us use their theater stage, and then we had curtains all around, so we had a fairly dead room, so there wasn't any extraneous ambiance that you can add.
Yeah, nothing bouncing off the walls.
Yeah, you can add that digital reverb and stuff later on in your mastering. But it took us all morning to get the settings right, and then we went out back and just did one take of each song. And
nice.
I've heard two tracks so far he's mixed, and I was very happy with the way my voice sounded. I guess I should like my voice at this stage of, I've been singing for almost 50 years, and
you finally gotten comfortable with it? Yes.
Yeah, my first gig was in college. My voice teacher didn't have anybody in her church choir that could read music. And I would just come in on Sunday morning and they would go through the whole program before church. And that's all it took for me usually. And that paid for my lessons. But I think a couple mornings I came in, I was probably blowing fumes, from the night before.
Yeah, you mean the 90 proof kind?
I think that was my freshman year. For some reason, I had a thing for scotch. And teacher's cream was what I was drinking.
Yeah, 8 a.m. scotch hangover after a 4 a.m. to bed. That sounds freshmanish.
Well, when you're singing bass, it's, you kind of got that.
Well, that just, the peaty smokiness of scotch adds to the profundo of the bass.
Yes, and we were up in a balcony where, they couldn't see how red my eyes were or anything. So, yeah. But, things seem to be going better for me. I've been doing EMDR now for almost 3 months, and I'm not having nearly as many nightmares.
Oh, good.
Yes, that is good. It's funny, when I got on the CPAP, I've been on CPAP just about a year now, and I started having a little more sleep at night. I started dreaming. I hadn't dreamed for years. My sleep was so bad. And of course, you know, all those nightmares I was missing came back to, you know. And I started journaling, so it's actually a good process to me. I really believe in dream work. And started dancing again. I guess it's summertime. I know I'm feeling better when I dance. I've got a, you know, all wood floor, so it's kind of like a little dance studio here.
Michelle Flatley.
Yeah, when I first saw the place, the real estate agent showed me, and it was all empty. I just said, "All right, dance floor." And he just had this weird look on his face, like, "Okay."
As long as you want to buy it, you can do anything you want on it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm hoping I have my disability hearing sometime this year. It's 14 months since we filed for the third time. And so I got a call from the disability attorney. Said they, you know, they considered inactive and they drop them after 6 months, you know, because it's a, you know, carrying costs or whatever, and they only get so much, you know, they're limited how much they can charge.
Right, and every time they ditch a claim and you have to refile, that moves your onset date up.
Well, and that was just it, you know. Whenever things came, they automatically filed an appeal for me, so I didn't miss that. But I had a friend that. It took her 4 years to get hers, and another friend that took 8 years to get Section 8 housing. So I'm lucky that I have a place I can
greatest
afford.
Country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God, 8 years.
Amen. So, yeah, I can't remember what I was going for there. But our next gig is over in the Red Lion. We like that place, and we're having a different trumpet player playing lead, so it'll be interesting to see what the band sounds like with a different lead player.
There won't be too much of an adjustment.
No, he's sat in with us on second chair, but he's never played the lead book. So he's a good sub because he can sub for either one of our trumpet players.
Well, that's your utility utility trumpet player is what that is.
Yeah, and he teaches in a small school district about an hour from here, and he doesn't get to play that much. So he's always got this hungry attitude, and he drove up to mix sound for us. When we played for the Meadowood Speech Camp benefit. And we've got an email this week. They invited the whole band to come up and visit the camp because we've played three times now, and I don't think any of us have actually been there. But it's up in the Blue Mountains, and it's just a really good cause. It's for children that have speech and hearing, you know, issues, and they work with real good audiologists and therapists, and it's up in, you know, it's a really cool place. So it's a good cause. They have a golf tournament, you know, and
nice,
raise money that way.
Nice.
So yeah, we do that every year so far.
Well, good deal. I hope you have, even though it's Wednesday, I hope you have a good weekend coming up, and you know, maybe we'll hopefully we'll talk again maybe next week.
Oh yeah, we play an hour gig at one of the assisted living places Sunday. So, and they really appreciate us. They don't get much action there. Hanging out with the nurses getting their medication.
Terrifying
yeah,
thoughts.
It was good talking to you, Bob. And safe journey to D.C. Try to stay on your diet.
Well, I'm gonna. I really don't have a choice. And I'm shedding pounds again, so that's a good thing. And yeah. I guess I'm getting the nutritional value of all that hickory smoke. But mostly it's yogurt. And while it's still here during the limited run of the season, once again, I highly recommend the Chobani watermelon yogurt.
Well, do you remember when Ellie Mae took dance lessons and they had her on a diet and Granny was all upset to him, going, "What are you eating?" And yogurt and stewed prunes, Granny.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, those were the days.
We thought they'd never end. Yes. Oh, that's a different lyric. Clarity, you have yourself a good evening, dear.
It was nice chatting with you, Hans.
Night. Bye now. That's our pal Clarity up in the Oregon desert. Let's see. A couple of notes. Steve in New York says, I think I've gotten my answer from the Horn Family Community Congregation. Children were coached. Photoshopped. People like that are simply irredeemable. I don't want to be in a country with people like this. I can help people from outside the country. I can help people escape their countries and go somewhere more humane. I can help rescue people from here to another country. I think I've made my decision. Thanks, Horn Family. Thanks, Steve. And then says, by the way, put me on the table for a $25 challenge. Thank you. That means the next 25 bucks that comes in, if it comes in, Steve will double. And thanks very kindly to Darcy for responding to Clarity's serenade there. Thank you, Darcy, very much. That took us down to 340. So we'll get below 300 if we match Steve's challenge. Clarence with a note says, self-inflicted wound. Bob, I'm wondering, when will the American people get a grasp of history? Don't hold your breath. The American political and military ventures into Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador created this immigration fiasco. The U.S. government backs and funds the right-wing fascist governments of these nations. The violence and chaos would be minimal if we stopped meddling in their affairs. True enough, but they also have other problems, and we got to be factual here. We facilitate it via, yay, capitalism. In Honduras, mining concerns, extraction concerns. But it's a hell week. How about that? We create hell where they live, they, them. And then we give them hell when they try to get away from the hell we created for them. Why can't they just sit there and die? Right? Whoop, whoop. Wah, wah. That was what Corey Lewandowski said. Wah, wah. When told about a crying child, a Down syndrome little girl torn from her mother's care. Wah, wah, he said, because he has no soul, because he is a monster, because he is a misanthrope, like roughly a third of this country. Because, see, that's where I am. I'm pretty sure that if 70% of the American people disapprove of putting children in prison camps, that means 30% don't. And that's the same hard case, cancerous knot of dead enders that remain the maggot core. And when a third of your country is full-blown fascist, your country has bigger problems than you or anyone else, myself included, can probably even begin to contemplate. So 20 minutes before the hour, and let's check in with Scott out in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. It's a multitude of pleasures to speak with you today.
Why, thank you. Thank you very kindly, sir.
I have not.
I know you've probably respond. I know you've probably never seen it, but you remind me of something. There's that ad for NordVPN that I see running on MSNBC. They've since changed it, but for a while they had this sort of generically Northern European looking dude who moved like a Disney animatronic. Did you know that when you go on the internet, your entire family is at risk? I was like, damn.
I remember seeing that, actually, back when I had expanded cable. And I remember thinking, you know, where the hell did they get this dude, you know, smart programming in the sense of computer-generated graphics and people. And I wanted to take a crack at the question that somebody posed.
You mean Steve?
You know, has it ever been as bad as it is now? Whoever it was calling on seniors, some of the more decrepit, seasoned members of the Horn family, and I figured
you used that word, Bub, not me.
Decrepit senior? Hell, no, I just turned 64. That he's talking about me, Bubba. But anyway, before I do that, Clarity, the serenade was wonderful, and I wonder if she takes requests.
Oh dear God!
Because while I was
I'm sure she does.
I was waiting.
But if you hum, and if you hum a few bars, right?
Yeah. Hey, buddy, do you know the monkey shit in your tuba? No, hell, I wrote it.
Wait a minute. By God, we had to have a cowbell in there somewhere, and that's worthy. Know it.
There you go. Hell, I wrote it.
Play anyway, it. If I can get his pajamas off, I'm going to fuck it.
While I was waiting, I was playing with a tune. I was inspired to come up with my own little parody tune. But you kind of ruined it without knowing it, because you have given the designation maggot to the Trump supporters, the minions and fanatics. And this tune, as far as I've gotten, requires the use of the term maggot, but not in a Trumpian way. But anyway, it's to the tune of what do you get when you fall in love? You get enough germs to catch pneumonia. I think it's a Hal David, Burt Bacharach tune. But my version is, what do you get when you vote for Trump? You get enough shit to gag a maggot. And that's as far as I've gotten. So if she wants to work on that,
well, it's
go for it.
Yeah, well, it's a dandy start.
Well, there you go. That's my story of my life. Dandy starts all over. I'm up to my ass and dandy starts.
Yeah, it's an execution thing for the rest of it, right?
Yeah, that's a great name for a inept racehorse, Dandy Stark.
His mutter was a mutter.
Jesus, I was a little late to the party. Did I hear you say that you're going away again?
Oh well, the interment of my aunt is this Friday in D.C.
I thought that was this past week.
No, that's Thursday. The travel tomorrow thing, Thursday, home Saturday.
Oh, well. June has shaped up to be a really shitty month for us all. You know, your aunt, Punky.
Well, my aunt was actually May. My aunt was in May, but because she's being buried at Arlington, there's some lag time.
Oh, yeah. Well, government operation, you know?
Right.
They couldn't find a guy to lean on the shovel. I don't mean to make any sort of light about your departed aunt. But
oh, no.
Anyway,
no.
That's not why I called. I want to take a crack at, are things as bad as have they ever been this bad, I think was the way the question was put. All right, I just turned 64, okay, this last Saturday.
Yes, you did, and happy birthday.
And I hope you all will still love me.
When you're 64, yes.
I'm getting too old to wash in ordinary water. You've got to grease me joint by joint. But anyway, that's not why I called.
Well, there's a visual for the evening.
Yeah. I gave
it's Saturday night. Time to get good and greased.
Let's grease Grandpa. Why don't we? But, all right, I remember vividly the year that occurred exactly 50 years ago. 1968 was the most horrendous, incredible year that I had lived in up to that point. And if you go on, I think it's Google Books on your magic internet machine, and then Google Life Magazine, January 10th, 1969. They have a special issue of Life Magazine looking back, kind of a recap edition of the magazine that goes month by month, laying out exactly how incredible, is how Life Magazine put it, 1968 was. Okay, so that's kind of like my benchmark for madness in terms of dysfunction in the country and the world.
Let me ask you though, Scott, and I know, I mean, yeah, 1968. I was busy being five.
Didn't miss much.
But it was a chaotic and terrifying year. The assassinations of Dr. King and of Bobby Kennedy, the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and on and on. But as compared with the current era, did it have the sense about it that we couldn't get over it, that it was not going to get better, that we had jumped the shark, that we were circling the drain?
Well, let's put it in perspective. In 1968, I was, what, 14? Yeah, I guess that, yeah, because I'm 64 this year. Okay, so yeah, I was 14, more or less average. You know, I excelled in certain ways, but was average, sometimes below average in other ways. But growing up outside D.C. and inside the Beltway, I had a ringside seat, okay, which held me in good stead as far as staying informed. And we had an actual news media back then, so there's that. And I was a curious lad, you know, a budding rabble-rouser, interested in stuff. Okay, so I had a good seat. I wasn't way up in the nosebleed and the cheap seat section. So, yeah, based on thinking back at how it made me feel, it seemed totally unlike anything that had happened prior in my little lifetime up till then. But here's the key to it. What else happened in 68 for me personally? On my 14th birthday, I was with a group of people that were arrested at the Pentagon for protesting the war. And when I say at the Pentagon, I don't mean out in the parking lot or on the steps. I mean in the shopping concourse of the Pentagon, which the general public used to be able to go into back in those days. So I was an activist even then. Around that time, in D.C., they were wrapping up Martin Luther King's Resurrection City program, where the Poor People's Campaign, and I went to the closing, not festivities, but the closing program for that, you know, entertainment, march from the ellipse of the monument down to the Lincoln Memorial, and then there was a day of speeches and music and stuff. I think the following year, or maybe it was that same year, in my little hometown, I joined a group of people protesting every week so that the white-owned cab companies would hire black drivers. And that's just a little bit of what I was up to. So the distinction, the difference between then and now for a lot of people is people aren't participating or being anywhere near as active and outraged and purposefully active and outraged, I don't feel, as we were back then. I mean, it's way crazier because, A, the people doing the crazy stuff, they feel as if they've got some kind of mandate. And how you get a mandate out of a popular vote deficit of 3 million votes is beyond me. But they have taken that to be a mandate. And the news media,
if I could interject, what they also do is, remember, he's told them he actually won the popular vote, but it just didn't look like it because of all the illegal voting that went on.
Yeah. Well, it's that old thing. If you can't blind them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit. That's on Trump's family coat of arms, for Christ's sake, you know? So, yeah, I would say it's every bit as bad as it ever was, but it's worse in a lot of worse ways, which there is a poll that one of the polling agencies has taken every presidential election year for like 50 or 60 years or something. And it's about a happiness index or a quality of life index or something. But basically, it's a question that they fine-tuned over the years, and they ask it, and it supposedly is a very good barometer.
Is that the misery index?
Misery index, I think is the name, yeah. Okay? Now, think back to 2008. When it was Obama and, I can't even think of the vice president under Obama.
Biden.
I say with a surety, friends, with these teeth, you can't buy them through the mail. You must go in and have them fitted. But, it was Obama and Biden versus McCain and Palin, for Christ's sake, okay? And coming off of 8 years of Bush and Cheney, okay? Or as I call them, the delightful vaudeville team of W and Darth. Look for them at a theater near you.
Count Bicula, but, blah.
So the misery index, 2 months after the fucking world economy almost went up, suffused in an incandescent glow, I would say the misery index prompted people to get out there and behave in a manner that was consistent with getting us off of that track and hopefully onto a more positive one. So how does 08 compare to 18? Are we anywhere near the depth in terms of misery as we were then? And if we are, what are we going to do about it? Have we had enough yet? And I would say after a year and a half, I've had more than enough. I don't know about you. Well, I do know about you. And well, I've been meaning to talk to you about it. But I just don't get the sense that people are taking it seriously enough to actually do something to get as many of these crazy batshit crazy bastards out as we can, and to work toward, to use that as a springboard to get Trump out in 2020.
Well, and but 2020, the one thing that this has brought home to me, Scott, is that we don't have 2020. We don't even have November 2018. If this man is not removed from office post-haste, there may not be anything to save in 2018. And I know that sounds alarmist. I know it maybe sounds sky is falling, hair on fire, what have you. But because I wasn't able to be on the air in the last couple of days, I had to just sort of internalize a lot of it. And I asked myself at one point, okay, while we all wait for this big blue wave that we just know is going to bring us sunshine and frisbees and wheat checks, how many more thousands of children are going to be in concentration camps?
Yeah.
And sometimes, well, sometimes you have to say things to give them reality. And, okay, we're all waiting on Mueller. Yeah, I get it. We're waiting on Mueller. But you know what? You don't have to wait on Mueller for this policy. And this policy was deliberately done. And we know who did it, and we know who approved it. And I submit that it is impeachable. Because anything, Scott, is an impeachable offense if Congress says it is. And I don't know what these no goods, these pasty faced, doughy white people who persist in supporting him in the Congress think they're gonna get out of this. But I mean, are they gonna fight over the radiated MREs in the post apocalyptic world? I don't know. I mean, I'm watching the video feed from Duluth right now, with the sound down, and Julius Geezer is standing there with his thumbs hooked in his belt buckle like he's the new sheriff just come to town. And he's apparently got some Minnesota Republican office holders up there performing their MAGA duties. And they have no idea. I mean, or they do have it. I don't know. But what is flummoxing me is the fact that there is no way to hold any of these people to account. No way. I mean, let's just take a moment and see what one of these blithering idiots is saying.
Oh, no.
Mr. President, before your election, you made a promise to visit Minnesota, and you promised more jobs, fewer regulations, and a better economy for everyone. Now, jobs are up, unemployment numbers are at a historic low, small businesses and manufacturers are surging, and optimism is at an all-time high.
What country does that fucker live in?
Well, I'm not a Bible scholar.
I mean, how optimistic are the kids in the concentration camps, all-time high?
Well, no, I'm thinking of from one of the epistles, take heed that you think you standeth, lest ye fall. They're living in a dream. And this gets me back to the activities of business, of ramping up and getting our asses in gear for 2018 and 2020. I mean, just go full tilt boogie on behalf of bringing some sanity back to the system, okay? I personally think there are more of us than there are of them. I mean, that was proven in 2016 on the basis of the 3 million popular votes that Trump didn't get. Okay? And if we had had a less Well, I'll come right out and say it. If we hadn't had a less flawed candidate in 2016, and I don't want to relitigate that, but I think that we wouldn't be dealing with like 80% of the horse shit that we're up to our chin in today. But my time machine is in the shop. There's nothing I can do about that. But I can sure as hell do something about it in enlisting and encouraging as many of the more of us than there are of them to take this shit seriously, beginning like, oh, I don't know, yesterday. Because they're living in a realm of unreality, which is unprecedented. It's unsurpassed. We have never seen quite the like of this before. And if it goes unchecked, hell, I remember 1984, the book, as well as anybody who's read it. Wasn't the big job of that dystopian future using the pneumatic tubes for the folks upstairs to send, quote, corrections in the official history of life in that world? And people might accuse me of over dramatizing, okay, and calling it way worse than it is. But when was 1984 written? Like the early 40s?
Late 40s? Late, I think. Late 40s.
Okay. If that notion and scenario can come to the mind of a person, granted a talented writer, that long ago, and be quoted so many years later, and I think there's been like a movie made of it. I know Richard Burton was in it, and there's probably been stage performances and dramatic readings. It should have resonance and relevance in today's world. And the technology allows, I mean, hell, we're no longer in the era of pneumatic tubes to send messages. We've got instantaneous a world of information or misinformation at our fingertips. Damn near every man, woman, and child of us. So this is serious. This is like serious shit. You know, and I guess I don't have to tell you, but Jesus, come on, people.
I know. And yeah, you're preaching to the choir as far as the Horned Family Community Congregation is concerned, too. And I don't, you know, it's like something Steve said earlier. These people are irredeemable. The corpulent white lady in the diner, eating her over easy egg with the runny yolk, talking about, well, I love children, but this, you know, this ain't even real. Donald Trump done told me they was actors and. And the pictures has done been photoshopped. Fuck. That's 30% of America, Scott. Well, and I go back to something I've said before, not to, you know, hammer away on poor old Trigger laying on the ground or anything. But when you start an election campaign and you've got 30% in the bank, it's a lot easier getting to 50.1 than starting from zero.
Yeah, I take that point.
And come 2020, every one of the Democrats, whoever winds up being the nominee, is starting at zero. Or maybe less than zero, depending on how much hue and cry and how much money they have to raise it. Jill Wi-Fi Stein has.
Well, I think I have a response to the issue that you've raised, because it's as valid an issue as has been raised thus far in the conversation. And we would be fools not to bear it in mind and then translate that understanding of it into meaningful action, okay? But do you remember penny bubblegum, those little rectangular
Gosh, yes. I used to fill my pockets with it on the way to school.
Okay. I don't know whether it was Bazooka or the other brand.
There was Double Bubble by Fleer. There was Bazooka, which I always thought had a great flavor. And then, the one that was most readily available and I thought was just the better, you know, benchmark quality, was Super Bubble. And then everything changed when Bubble Yum came along.
Well, the reason I ask and bring that up, okay, one of the comics had I guess it was Bazooka. Wasn't there a little comic included in the chunk of bubble gum called Bazooka Joe?
Yes. Yeah, that was with the Bazooka. Yeah. And Bazooka was the little flat rectangles.
Yeah. Okay, I remember a Bazooka Joe comic, and I forget what his little comic strip pal was. But one of them was on his hands and knees, frantically looking around. And whoever the other character was walks up and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he says, "I'm looking for my quarter that I lost." You know? And the gist of it is, he actually lost it around the corner from where he's on his hands and knees searching. And he says, "What are you looking here for?" And whoever the little kid on the ground is says, "Well, the light's better." Okay?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure how that fits in this conversation, but we've got to get our noses out of our navels and our heads out of our butts and quit putting our attention and outrage at something that's as meaningless as, "Well, I'm looking here because the light's better." Okay? Yes, I'll give you that the red hat wearing maggots and the minions and the diehards are irredeemable. I'll give you that. I'm wondering if there's any hope to be had, and I know via Shawshank Redemption, hope is a dangerous thing, but here I am anyway with a little of it. I'm wondering if we cannot positively engage the people who've been sitting out the last couple of elections and certainly all the midterms, okay, and engage people who took a few sips of the Kool-Aid for Trump in 2016 and register the hell out of new voters galore, especially the younger folks, to make up for some of that head start that Trump's 30 or 35 or edging up toward 40% of the vote count that he's got even after all this. There's got to be a way to counteract it, and I would think that voter engagement and excitement surrounding a candidate that can kick ass and take names on the Democratic side would be a couple of good steps in the right direction. That's all I'm saying, you know?
Well, it would be, and it remains to be seen. And, you know, we cannot, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, we give up on the blue wave or whatever, but the problem is immediate. This problem, the kidnapping of children, is immediate. And it and it's a goddamn crime, okay?
Yeah.
It's a high crime. It's a misdemeanor. It's a floor wax. It's a dessert topping.
Well, like I said, I was a little late getting to the party today, and the last news I saw was, eight, 10 hours ago, other than what I've been able to ascertain thus far. Wasn't Trump the guy that pissed and moaned about executive orders? I take it he's doing this through executive orders.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right. Well, what? What did he make a statement when he signed it, saying, giving his supposed reason?
Yeah, I mean,
for doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I played part of it. Hold on, wait a minute, I got to.
Okay, because I was late. That's all. You know, that's why I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, this is okay. This is what he was saying earlier when he signed the damn thing.
There's a problem that's gone on for many years, as you know, through many administrations, and we're working very hard on immigration. It's been just left out in the cold. People haven't dealt with it, and we are dealing with it. So step by step, just like we dealt with North Korea, we dealt with Iran, we dealt with an economy that was heading in the wrong direction, we dealt with a lot of different problems. This is one that has been gone on for many decades. So we're keeping families together, and this will solve that problem. At the same time, we are keeping a very powerful border, and it continues to be a zero tolerance. We have zero tolerance for people.
So in other words, people who seek asylum at the wrong checkpoint are going to continue to be charged with illegally entering the country, a misdemeanor. And that's
really,
you know, that's part of the overall perspective. We are separating families. We are tearing children away from their mothers for a misdemeanor. That's like saying that CPS comes and takes your children when you spit on the sidewalk. Now they might do that in Singapore and then give you 30 or 40 lashes with a cane, but this ain't Singapore.
Now, in response to all that, has anyone called Trump or the right-wing media out on some of those supposed accomplishments that he ticked off?
Oh, sure, every day. But again,
no,
that's...
No, I'm talking... See, he used that to say, this is just the latest in the things that we've addressed. And then he cited North Korea, Iran, and a couple of others.
Oh, we're already many minutes into his harangue in Duluth. And I'm sure by now he has already explained to them that he is the greatest president that President has ever presidented. And he's mentioned North Korea and Iran and the Obama economy that he can claim absolutely nothing for. By the way, the stock markets are heading into the tank and have shed just about all of their 2018 gains now. But,
yeah,
you know,
the
rubes don't care. The rubes don't want to hear that. The rubes are fucking stupid.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Fuck the rubes, in as much as that will be helpful. Our attention should be solely focused, laser-like, on people who can help us, not sit there in their own pile of doo-doo with their red hats on, babbling nonsense. Those people are lost. We don't want to talk to them anyway because they're not going to do us any good at all.
Here's the long-term problem. That 30% hard case dead ender cancerous knot of maggots enables every bad thing that happens. That's who he plays to. That's who he wants to hear from, and that's who he thinks is going to carry him over the top in 20. And preserve the congressional majority in 18.
Did you get any sense of panic, not expressed, but as a motivation for signing this executive order? I mean,
some Republicans quietly went about the business of saying, "You're fucking killing us." And I'm loyal and everything, but I can only go so far.
Okay, but I mean, did the executive order today come out of Trump's recognition? It's that old thing of the handwriting on the wall.
No, he's still pissed off about it. He didn't want to sign it, but it was finally explained to him that it had to happen because everything was going to go to hell. And the thing is, he got his long term wish anyway. So now we're insofar as, you know, you heard him say, but we're still going to have zero tolerance. So what that effectively means, Scott, is that we are going to continue to arrest people and put people in concentration camps. We're just not going to split the families up. It's still going to be detention for something that's generally not a detention offense.
So the essential thing to take away from all this is the whole dog and pony show with the executive order today was designed to give the impression that meaningful action was occurring when nothing like that actually was.
Yeah.
Well, we're all screwed then.
We've got 3 tender years, baby gulags, and plans for more. And it scares me to pieces, the idea of the for-profit media will go, well, we shone a light on it, and it's all good now.
Yeah, but shining a light at the dog park on where the dogs have previously been and left little messages is only half of the deal. Sooner
right.
or later, the crew's got to come in with the scoopers and the little blue plastic bags. Otherwise, you're wandering blindfolded and drunk into a goddamn fecal minefield.
Precisely. Yeah, no doubt
aye,
about
aye,
it.
Aye, aye, aye.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. Well, I don't know. I was feeling so damn good.
Yeah, I know, and I ruined it. Hey, we gotta teach chirps to make noise in the background.
Chirps has been very chirpy these last couple of weeks, by the way. She's not being chirpy right now, but many was the morning when old Punkadunk was still around that I would get up and it would be the most exciting thing for Punky that had happened thus far that day, my arousal in a nice way and arrival to greet the early afternoon, okay? And many was the day that old Chirps would take no notice of it whatsoever unless the food dish was low or the kitty box needed a good scoop, okay? But since old Punk has gone on to his reward, Chirps just can't get enough of saying hello, even if she said hello 20 minutes ago.
Aw, she's just looking after you, Scott. That's sweet.
It's really weird. That first week was a fucking nightmare, Bob. But and I'll close with this, I guess. And finally, because it was so sudden. The bird had just turned 21, so it wasn't exactly a shock. But it was like somebody threw a switch between the Thursday, the day before, and that Friday, okay?
Yeah.
And that was the part that I just had no way to fully prepare for, okay? So the first week, I was just, remember not too long ago, I would brag about how great my sleep was. Hardly a thing ever bothers me. Well, all that threw a goddamn wrench into my sleep. So finally, after about the first week, I said, look, you're looking at this the wrong way. You've got to not focus on the sudden loss of your feathered friend of 21 years, okay? You've got to look at it through the lens of what a great 21 years that was.
Precisely.
And what a delight, you know? And I still haven't made up my mind whether I'm going to go bird shopping in the not-too-distant future, because it'll depend on a couple of things. But who knows? I may say, look, I would very much like to have a different bird be part of these proceedings, hopefully in a more melodic way than old Punky was, because that little bastard could shriek his birdie guts out. You saw the videos that I
posted,
didn't you?
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Yeah, he actually had the capacity to make you know, wonderful, happy, little, pleasant noises, which is good. I don't know why he wouldn't. Maybe he didn't want to show off for the worldwide
audience. It's a politics program. He was ranting.
Yeah, he was in the amen corner.
Yeah, this was it was no time to be polishing up his those endearing young charms.
Yeah. Oh well. So is that it? Yeah, I guess that'll be it for today. I'll make room for somebody else. But I'm glad you were with us today, and safe travels to D.C. Bring me back a couple of those tasty cake pies that are shaped like the Merrimack or the Monitor. I forget which.
If I see them, by God.
You can't get them out here. You can get a couple of the tasty cake products. Oh, but the apple and the blueberry and the peach tasty cake pies were my favorite.
Well, now I'm intrigued, and my gut will be in trouble.
Well, I haven't had one, God, for Jesus, since like 1998.
By the way, in a piece of shameless punnery, Lee in New York says bird shopping to Scott, don't be cheap about it.
Well, I found a place that hand raises them here locally. And I don't know, I just kind of browsed at their website, and I don't know if they deal only with retail outlets or individuals, but that would be the way to go if I get
is there such a thing as a birdie mill?
Yeah, I would say that there are places that don't result in healthy, friendly birds, you know?
Yeah, but you get one that's been hand-raised and transferred onto you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good luck, and I'm sure we'll hear the chirping when and if you make the decision. Scott, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Okay, I will, Bob, and travel safely. And
all of that. Yep, exactly. Take care.
Okay, I'll see you.
Bye. Our buddy Scott in San Diego. A couple of different things. Steve's challenge remains on the table. Thanks to Henry and Darcy for jumping in this evening. It was badly needed. The remainder is badly needed too. And if we can get Steve's challenge responded to, that'll take us down to $290 to go. Thank you very kindly, Steve, for making the challenge, and hopefully somebody will respond to it. Note from Kitty in Boston. Not sure if you already mentioned this, but kids are still going to be torn from their families despite the executive order because of the definition of family. According to Trump's order, family is parents and their children only. So if a child comes here with a grandparent, aunt, or uncle, that child will be separated from that family member. So if you're a baby and all you have in the world is your abuela, tough shit for you. Got to keep those for-profit prisons full. Aching all over right now from this horror, says Kitty. And I know that feeling. It is. It's an ache. It's a sickness. What has become of us? A note coming in from Todd. Welcome to Nazi America. You're absolutely correct. If we do not stop this madness now, it may be too late. Most of our institutions are being hollowed out except for the appointment of federal judges and the penal system, including the immigrants. Soon it'll be illegal to dissent. The writing is on the wall. We have no one of stature to challenge this nonsense. It's not about knowledge or expertise anymore. It's about personality. The TV babies described in Drugstore Cowboy are now older. And they're voting. Grill while you can. Signed, Barbecue Todd. I'm glad I'm not the only one that has this sense of foreboding. It just it feels. It feels ominous. And I have no doubt that that vile little pustulant neo-maxi Zoom dweeby, Stephen Miller, is plotting more evil. I read an article earlier today where an anonymous White House staffer, who is a colleague of Stephen Miller, referred to him as, and this is the quote, Waffen-SS. That's what his friends say about him. Call me crazy, but that might be a clue. Note coming in from Shorty. Don't look now, but there's a nasty, vile mess of hateful criminal conduct exploding in the Behar County Deputy Sheriff's Office down in Texas. A Behar County Sheriff's Deputy turned himself in Thursday after he was indicted on an assault charge, according to a news release from the agency. Jose Raul Paez was indicted over an off-duty incident that occurred in February 2017. The case was filed by the Sheriff's Public Integrity Unit. Paez, 31, was hired in 2012 and worked at the jail. He's the fourth deputy to be indicted in 9 days. On Tuesday, 15-year veteran Leonard Lopez was charged with sexual assault related to a 2016 incident involving an acquaintance. On April 11th, deputies Michael Gomez and Anthony Hernandez were indicted on charges of official oppression. Authorities accused them of assaulting an inmate last August. All four are on administrative leave. That's the other phrase for paid vacation, pending the outcome of the charges. Robert and a couple others pointed out that 1984 was 1984 because Orwell just reversed the 4 and the 8 from 1948 when he wrote it as a cautionary tale about a possible future back then. Robert says the film version, the 1984 film version of 1984, is excellent, but depressing to watch. It's about 8:30, 8:27 actually. Let's check in with Julius Geezer. You know, when you sit here and you watch him with the sound down and it's just the hand gestures, you think at some point in time he's just going to start doing "I'm a little teapot, short and stout." He's nuts.
From other countries, we're bringing back our companies from other countries. Chrysler is coming back. Chrysler just announced they're coming back. Many, many companies are coming back to our country. They know where the action is. This is where they want to be. And as far as trade is concerned with other countries, we want fair and reciprocal trade. We don't want stupid trade like we had for so long. Stupid trade.
This is the
remember
part he
the
loves
word
best.
Reciprocal. Remember the word reciprocal.
Because he can't.
We've been ripped off by almost every country on earth, our friends and our enemies. And I hate to say it, our friends do a bigger and better job than the enemies. But those days are over. Those days are over.
Yeah, we don't have any friends anymore except North Korea and Russia.
And even before we finish off with the trade deals, and we will finish off with the trade deals, people don't realize we have the cards, because we're the piggy bank that everybody was robbing for 30 years. We're like the piggy bank. Let's go get some more. You look at the European Union. They put up barriers so that we can't sell our farm products in. and yet they sell Mercedes and BMW, and the cars come in by the millions, and we hardly tax them at all. They don't take our cars, and if they do, the tax is massive.
Well, our cars are kind of shit compared to BMWs and Mercedes. And secondly, a lot of the BMWs and Mercedes are built in Alabama and South Carolina, you ignorant fuck.
We will not be taken advantage of anymore. We're a great country. We're going to be an even greater country, hopefully greater than we've ever been before. We have such potential. We just secured a record $700 billion in funding to rebuild our military, which was in very sad shape.
And I guess those maggot members of the military will just say, yeah, well, we suck.
And we have approval for next year, $716 billion. We're ordering new planes. We make the best in the world. We're ordering new ships. We're ordering new military equipment. And we even gave our great warriors a raise.
Even. Kind of an afterthought.
Gave them a raise. For the veterans, we passed the largest VA reforms in half a century, a landmark VA accountability law. You know what that is? You couldn't fire anybody that worked in the VA. They were sadistic in some cases. They were lazy. They were this. There were lots of different things. You could never fire anybody because the accountability, you could forget it. So we passed a bill that they've been trying to pass for almost 40 years. It's called VA Accountability, where now you bring the person into the office and you say, Jim, I'm sorry to tell you, you're fired. Get out of here. Boom.
I guess we're paying for this. This isn't coming out of his campaign stash. No way. So I guess we're paying for it. But by the way, while we're... Okay, let me go somewhere else with this. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and we haven't hardly done any prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. But I wanted to take a moment to share this with you. Over on MSNBC, Stephanie Ruhle sat down with some pasty-faced, doughy, evangelical, white, old white men to talk about, kidnapping children. It will come as no surprise whatsoever for you to find out that these ministers of the gospel... are A-okay.
Mr. Bill Sutton leads Trinity Baptist Church in McAllen, Texas.
So some say that if you look at these detention centers, you must not care about these kids.
Well, I do care about these kids. I just don't know what to do, but I've got to put my trust somewhere. I can't solve it, and so I'm trying to believe that the government will do that which is right because they're ministers of God for righteousness' sake.
Mike Jones, an evangelical Christian from North Carolina, questions whether the jarring images of children at detention centers are even real.
I don't believe it. I think it's all a big lie. I don't think that that's happening. I don't think that the people who are so-called being separated are what the news is portraying them to be.
Also in North Carolina, Antioch Baptist Church pastor Kenneth Pardue places the blame squarely on the parents.
Who am I upset with? It's the parents. The parents who bring their children to the border to violate the law.
But other prominent Christians are publicly blaming the administration. More than 600 leaders and members of the United Methodist Church signed a formal complaint against Attorney General Jeff
Sessions.
Yeah, that's
hilarious.
A member of their church who quoted the Bible to defend the immigration policy.
That really happened. The Methodist Church has filed charges. Against ecclesiastical charges against United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, accusing him of, among other things, child abuse and I think kidnapping. Not something that happens every other day in the United Methodist Church. But you heard him there, the pasty-faced, doughy white people, those ministers of the gospel, those servants of the Prince of Peace. Well, gosh darn it. He all but said Trump's anointed by God. James with a note says, gave him a raise. Kinda, sorta. They got that $2 tax cut. Wah, wah. Yeah, hopefully one of these days, Corey Lewandowski, when all is said and done, will learn to play a rusty trombone in prison. A guy can dream. But because we have to be capable of dealing with more than one issue at a time, a little reminder. Yesterday, with almost no fanfare whatsoever, with the leadership of Paul Ryan, the zombie-eyed granny starver, who, you must recall, fantasized during his college days around the old keg about growing up and taking Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare and all manner of social safety net away from people. I mean, that's not made up, that's real. Well, yesterday the Republicans released their 2019 proposed budget. And without being critical, because I'm not, because the horror is just gut-rending. While we were all looking at the kidnapped children in the concentration camps, Paul Ryan and his Republican fellow travelers said that they want $537 billion in cuts to Medicare. They want to cut $1.5 trillion from Medicaid. They want to cut $4 billion from Social Security. They say they have to do this in order to pay for their massive tax cuts for their wealthy patrons. Patriotic millionaires described it as morally bankrupt, patently absurd, and grossly un-American. That's a start. But tucked away behind those numbers, the mouth of hell yawns open wide. Wonder how many deaths are contained in $1.5 trillion in Medicaid cuts. Wonder how many, how much mortality is encompassed by $537 billion in cuts to Medicare. Wonder how the maggots will feel about that. I remember when they got so mad. And they showed up in D.C. because that Negro was in the White House. And they carried signs on their little scooters that said, "Get your government hands off my Medicare!" I reckon they'll show up? I wouldn't count on it. No. Let's check in with Julius Geezer for a second, then to the phones.
I'm smarter than they are. I'm richer than they are. I became president and they didn't. And I'm representing the greatest, smartest, most loyal, best people on earth. The deplorables, remember that? The deplorables.
Yeah, the Klansmen and the neo-Nazis. But they're not. That's not deplorable anymore.
You know, I was watching when Crooked Hillary made, and by the way, is it, hey, excuse me, have you been watching what's been going on with the Inspector General's report? What a scam this whole thing is, okay? How guilty is she?
If you weren't a Nazi, what must it have been like to watch a Nuremberg rally?
And his lover, Lisa Page. I don't think their wife and husband are too happy about that. What do you think? What do you think? I don't think so. No, but have you been seeing this whole scam?
What a scumbag.
Do you believe
what
you
see? Wait, no, really? Really? That adulterous, fornicating fucker? It just pointed at... Oh, my God. No shame. No brain, but no shame. Hey, Todd.
Hey, man. Look, what's going on?
I don't... You know, bad day to quit sniffing glue.
Man, look. I'm almost speechless. This is just... the way these people are doubling down on the lies, that Kirstjen Nielsen woman... this is scary shit. These people are shameless.
And they're monsters. You know, I haven't mentioned along the way the fact that we bailed out of the Human Rights Commission at the UN.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just something to generally remind us all, because it gets lost in the hoopla, but way, way, way back when Steve Bannon was still a public part of the regime, and not just still quietly working his magic in the background. Remember how he got all, well, to the extent that, it, remember how he got all excited at the thought of a great global conflagration war? And he said we needed one?
Yes.
And now Julius Geezer here is talking about a massive military buildup. Ron and Raleigh just wrote a minute ago and said, explain to me why you need a massive military buildup unless you intend to use it. Otherwise, isn't it a huge waste of money like Reagan's 600-ship Navy, which has been rusting at anchor since the 80s? I think he intends to use it. I think he'd love nothing more than to sail up and, go up the St. Lawrence Seaway and shell Canada. Our Canadian friends are going, what? Yes. He'd like to do that. He'd like to bomb the fuck out of France.
Mm-hmm. What? You know what? Let's look at the timeline of him using. He could not wait to start using military things. Remember, he demanded they blow up the MOAB, the mother of all bombs, in Afghanistan. Remember that?
Oh yeah. It was basically a military sugar tit for him.
Exactly. It was no purpose to it. He was like, oh, we had that kind of bomb. You know, oh, I want to use it. And, you know, he's the president. What can you say? Okay, and then, a couple months into his administration, we had these two ill-conceived special ops that failed, and that he was advised not to go through with it. Well, he wanted a victory so bad, so he put soldiers at risk against advice from military professionals. you know, that got kind of swept under the rug. It didn't get any legs, no traction. But that's really not why I called. However,
kind of irresistible, wasn't it?
Well, it's just, you know what, it's so much. And when you hear these people calling in on Washington Journal every morning, and it's like, man, like you said, they're irredeemable. It doesn't matter. And I talk with my buddy up the street, my friend from across the aisle up the street, you know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
At the convenience store today, and they don't care. And, you know, I convinced he's a Klansman now. Because every time I bring up white supremacy and Klansmen, he doesn't deny it. He just has this dead-ass look on his face like he's a fucking zombie, you know. And he got a little close to me. And then I was like, I told him, I said, hey, man, back up. And he's behind the counter, and there's a woman behind me. I didn't even know she was behind me, ready to purchase something, you know. And I didn't see her. He just said, hey, I have another customer. I didn't see the woman. You know, she didn't complain or anything. She was listening to us talk. You know, but I thought the mug was going to have a heart attack up in there, man. I don't even know if I can talk with him anymore. I'm done with him. Because now I see it in his eyes. But that's not why I called. I'm going to tell you something that's very disturbing. It has to do with what these concentration camps for these children. The way you don't see any female children. We know we have a human trafficking problem. Let me ask you something. Why in the world would they not let a senator in to see these facilities? That alone. Did you see that last week?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Called the cops on him.
Called the fucking police on a motherfucking senator. These are perilous times. We have to say no. Fuck this shit. Fuck that. Anybody who's retired who lives in the D.C. area, I'm telling you, we have to do something. We have to get a critical mass. This is unacceptable bullshit. Fuck this.
Well, in addition to getting himself in hot water with the Secret Service, the other thing Peter Fonda was doing was calling for 90 million Americans in the streets.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that.
And, of course, that's been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, the fact that that protest has been reduced to a sort of performance art form, Todd. Mm-hmm. You know, where everybody shows up on Saturday and mills around and chants, and then they're gone by Sunday. Showed the man.
It's like going to a concert.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, like you said it, theater, that's what you said. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's upsetting. It's upset.
Well, that's not going to get the job done. I was heartened by some news I saw out of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you caught this or not, but a group of mostly young people, anti-fascist, got together at the ICE jail in Portland. And they shut it down. And they blocked the driveways that the people who work there use to exit the building.
Good.
Because they, like, park underground and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops showed up and said, hey, can't you make some accommodations so these people can go home to their families? At which point the protesters said, you really didn't just say that, did you?
Families.
These people are working for an agency that kidnaps children, and you want them to be able to go home to their families?
You know, this whole scenario right now exemplifies our president's sociopathy. I mean, what's ironic is that the way he and his little disgusting attorney general who has no business having that job. Can you imagine him saying rule of law and he's a fucking perjurer? Can you imagine?
Yep, I know. And him a perjurer. Well, point well made.
I mean, literally, he hasn't been convicted yet, but he already in writing many times and verbally. Now, and we had to sacrifice one of our best people over some accusations, you know, but, you know, he did what he was silly. I'm not trying to get on a tangent, but I'm just saying it's very disturbing. You know, this guy has no, I mean, how are we supposed to respect authority with this guy, you know, at the helm? But I want to bounce something off you, and I know you only got a minute or two, but you know what? I think that on the federal level, I think we've all been played, and I think I can make it this very succinct. And it has to do with the way our system is set up in terms of gerrymandering, the Electoral College, and these private clubs that we call political parties. Because no matter how popular you are, if they don't want you in the party, you're not going to get on the ballot in many states. You know, and you got to be on the ballot in every state. You're just not going to win, or most states.
So well, presidentially, kinda, yeah.
That's what I mean, on the federal level, yeah. So it's set up from the beginning. So look at Obama. Now, Obama, he checked all the boxes. Very popular, progressive, you know, this and that. And then they put up Hillary Clinton next in, knowing that she was not going to win at that point in her career. I can see that now as living in the South for a number of years, that she would never have won, ever, period. I mean, the people get...
No, nobody had the courage to tell her that she was... politically doomed.
Doomed. That was a non-starter. All right. So, and see, this deep state that he talks about, you know, honestly, he may be getting that confused with something that's real, with, you know, C. Wright Mills, the famous sociologist, the power elite, you know, which is real. You see?
Yeah.
And they do run shit. So, this is my point. All right. So, all right. They knew he was going to win and she was going to lose. They knew that. So, all right, so he's in, and he didn't really think he was going to do 8 years, but he got 8 years. But knowing there will be a backlash against him, because we got the polar opposite. We got this ignorant white buffoon. As long as he ain't black, you know, because the whole, you know, you understand, a lot of white folks see the whole game change when that Negro was in the White House. The whole, it's like, you know, you just, oh, go to board over. Oh, I don't want to play this game anymore. You know, and then remember, his Goebbels, Steve Bannon, they already said, he's the snake. And, you know, evil people would tell you what they want to do. Like, you know, I'm coming to your house tonight, and I'm going to fuck your wife, and I'm going to take some shit, and then I'm going to go home. And they'll laugh, and you'll be like, what the hell are you talking about? And they'll do it because they're sick fucks. And that's him. He told us he was a snake. He said, I love the undereducated. He said exactly what he was going to do. And he was pals with Steve Bannon, and he was following that line. Now, they're deconstructionists. They already said they want to tear down the government. That's exactly what they're doing. Our government is being closed down day by day. They're shutting the doors. Government is being shut down, period. That's what they want. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're shutting the government down. Now, you know what? And remember, he likes debt. I hate to say his name, just to be succinct. Okay, Trump likes debt. He likes debt. He understands that if you romp enough debt, then you call the shots because they want some money back. They'll take pennies on a dollar because you owe them so much. So guess what? You know what they want to do? They want to change this whole paradigm, right?
Yeah.
They want to wreck the dollar. They want to wreck the dollar, and it's going to hurt. It's not going to hurt them. It's going to hurt us. And that's what this trade shit is about. You do know how complicated. You know, I have no interest in economists. You know, I didn't take any business classes, but I pay attention. But I know for a fact that it's like tuning a piano. You know, these trade agreements. You know, it's finely tuned. You know, it's working. Don't mess with it. You throw one. It's like Jenga. You pull one little block out, it can just mess up the whole thing. And now he's doing all this crazy stuff. He's going to wreck. The economies are going okay now, but with these.
Oh, no. I'm no economist, but I'm guessing the tariffs are going to kick in fairly soon. And well,
do you
go, man.
I'm telling you. Go ahead.
No. Go. I mean,
I'm just saying it, and I think that's the plan, and so that we don't have to pay back any debt, and they want to just realign. The world structure, these white supremacists. And remember, they were aligned with Russia. And you know what mountain ranges in Russia, you know, that is the nomenclature for white folks, right?
Can you the Caucasus?
There you go. These dumb white folks ain't that stupid. See? And I'm telling you, man, these people, why are they so hateful? It's just hateful. Hateful, hateful, nasty, nasty people.
Well, they're hateful because their privilege has been challenged, Todd. Why were Southerners hateful behind a veneer of gentility? Why were they vicious and murderous when the wrong people weren't looking?
Yeah.
Why did they cite the Bible to justify slavery?
Oh God, I can't tell you how I emailed you about that. Yeah, that should be so highly offensive to everyone. The fact that that motherfucker would even use that. You know, what about him? He is a damn proven liar. I mean, everybody lies, but damn, how the fuck do you not remember reading not just a Russian, like, okay, I met this Russian guy, he was selling purses, and I got one for my wife. No, it wasn't that. It was a fucking diplomat. How do you forget meeting a fucking Russian diplomat?
I know. Let me recommend something to you. Over at Think Progress, Todd, and it's really too deep to dig deep into, but from yesterday's date by Casey Michael, headline, Russians and the American Right Started Plotting in 1995. We have the notes from the first meeting. New documents obtained by Think Progress show how Russian and American fundamentalists first began their collaboration. Thinkprogress.org. It started in the church. It started with evangelical Christianity.
You know, I'm going to have to check that out. And, you know, we really, there's no more on the fence anymore. There really isn't. There really isn't. And, you know, it's not our fault that we have so many ignorant people running around this country. And you know what? If they want to call us elitists, so what? Because, you know, how would they have equated being educated or striving to seek knowledge as being elitist? You know, that's what black kids used to do each other when I was in school, and they still do it. When you try to be educated and speak properly and learn English and know math and science, oh, you're trying to be white. And black kids are still going through that. It's that same type of paradigm. You know, this is just nonsense. Congress has to do their damn job. And you know, did they get paid off? Did the Electoral College, did those fuckers get paid off? That's what I've been thinking about this. $50,000 apiece, that's less than $2 million. They could have paid everybody off.
I mean it kinda really does blow your mind when you finally get to where enough of the smoke clears that you can begin to see a picture of the landscape, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've got a suggestion, and I'm not being a smartass, Todd, if you've got a suggestion for what we do between now and November, I want to hear it. Because if you assume that the Democrats will vote en masse, en bloc,
mm-hmm.
then how do you bring pressure to bear on enough Republicans to get the job done? I mean, we're talking about maybe, what, 30, 35?
Yeah, to tip the scale? Yeah.
Between now and January, if these policies really are as odious as people like Corker and Flake have said, do you realize all they have to do is make a simple announcement and they can just fuck Mitch McConnell royally? All they have to do is say, we're going to caucus with the Democrats until some sanity comes back. And suddenly Mitch McConnell has no power anymore because he does not have a majority. We're not talking about building a rocket ship here. But again, it's a case of talking a good game and not playing it worth a damn.
I don't see we have a core, a hard backbone, a good spine, and then, you know, people on the outside helping.
Well, and the other part of it is when I'm sitting here saying, you know, where's somebody, anybody, just saying the man's got to be removed from office immediately. Talk like that it gives Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer the fan tods. Because they're close enough that they can taste it. And this is where my conscience becomes troubled, Todd. Because the calculation is that okay, we're not going to start hollering impeachment because we don't have a majority. Even though he's conspiring to kidnap children, which is like a serious federal felony. But we're not going to say that out loud because we want a blue wave and we want to take the House and Senate in November. And if we start making a ruckus about it, we'll get I understand the calculation. We'll get the maggots all excited. And then our blue wave will crash on the rocks. Red rocks. So we're just gonna have to suck it up and deal with the fact that by the time November 6th gets here, there's probably gonna be 15,000 babies in concentration camps.
Listen, I hear it in your voice. You see, we were willing to let things work out properly, you know, with the system. A couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that's where you were. That's where I was. But these people are moving so quickly into this fascist thing. I mean, in 3 weeks, who knows what they'll be doing?
Yeah, I know.
They're moving with speed. You see? And we all should have taken notice. What was that? A year and a half, 2 years ago now in Charlottesville when these people are saying blood and soil?
Yeah, I know.
See, we missed it. We missed it then. That should have said something to everyone in this country of good faith and good conscience. Because now look where we are. And this Stephen Miller guy has got Trump's mind and between him and Goebbels, Bannon. And you know, I don't even hear even in the media. Come on, when he says America first, say, well, you know, Germany, that's Nazi Germany. That's what Hitler did. I mean, come on. We have to start being honest with this shit.
Deutschland for Deutschland.
Fucking game anymore. See?
Deutschland for the Deutsch. Lebensraum. Again, and I'll just sort of drive the point home. When you hear white supremacists talking about we need a white homeland, that's just redneck for Lebensraum.
And what does that translate to?
Living room, living space. That's why the Germans moved back into the Sudetenland. They needed Lebensraum.
Okay, that makes sense.
Just like fake news is nothing but Lügenpresse.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right.
And now we find out that the National Park Service has granted in Washington, D.C., Todd, a permit for an anniversary rally of Unite the Right to bemoan the crushing of white people's civil rights.
What?
Didn't know that?
I've been doing things, different things. Oh, man. So you know who's going to show up for that. There'll be the Tiki Torch crowd to be out there.
Oh,
that.
They'll be, yeah, because it's a commemoration.
See, this thing has got legs because I'm telling you, there's a lot of law enforcement hooked up with this shit. And I've seen their tattoos. We've all seen their tattoos.
Okay, let me clarify. Yeah. DC's WUSA Channel 9 reported that the National Park Service approved the application but has not yet issued permits for the rally set to be held at Lafayette Square, directly across the street from the White House. Event is being organized by Jason Kessler, the organizer of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. This year we have a new purpose. That's to talk about the civil rights abuse that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia last year. We're not able to peacefully assemble. We're not able to speak. I keep telling people if your right to rally and your right to protest means that someone else's life might be in danger, then it's no longer free speech, but it's hate speech.
Wait a minute, Bob. Let me ask you something. Apparently I'm missing something here. Now, you are of a legal mind. It would seem that there would be grounds to not grant a permit since there's been a history of trouble, i.e. death, murder, with the gathering of this organization.
Yeah, but remember, this is a function of the executive, and the chief executive said there were some very fine Nazis in Charlottesville. They're applying for a permit to riot, basically. But the National Park Service has been largely purged. It is under the authority of the Department of Interior anyway, run by Ryan Zinke, who it turns out is a great big old filthy liar. And nobody's going to turn that application down and run the risk of offending Trump.
Fuck Trump.
But it's his
That's
national
the problem right
park.
Now.
But it's Trump. But it's his National Park Service now, Todd. I mean, that's where we are. Again, that's where we are.
We have to do something because I don't see. And, you know, where the hell is Tom Perez? That's what I'm saying. You know, we have to depend on these weaklings. They're not doing nothing. Who do we have? We got nobody who's really. People are simple now. They're simpletons. They fucking watch TV all day. And if they ain't on TV, they don't believe it. They don't read.
How many Germans weren't members of the Nazi parties but showed up and stuck their right arm in the air, okay, whenever it was necessary? There was a little incident at the rally tonight.
Oh, wait a minute. While I was holding, I hate to cut you off. Man, I was on hold. I don't have anything. Oh, my God, I got the night free. There's nobody here. Man, it's so peaceful. Oh, my God, it's beautiful. I'm luxuriating in peace. Anyway, when I was on hold and you played, it sounded like a fucking Klan rally. I swear to God.
Well, it's going to get... Okay, take a breath. Get the hockey puck, Todd. Because there was a protester tonight in Duluth, and he had a man bun. You ready?
NAFTA and Mexico. Horrible deal. They make over $100 billion on that horrible trade deal where factories were emptied. So many bad things have happened. And we're going to make it a part of NAFTA because you have to mark up thousands of miles coming through Mexico. You come up thousands of miles coming through Mexico, and we're going to stop it. Get them out of here. Get them out of here. Go home to your mom, darling. Go home.
And he
get
flicks
out of
his
here.
Finger.
Out.
He's holding up a poster of Trump standing next to Jeffrey Epstein, and the poster says, "Who is Jeffrey Epstein?" No, this is a clip.
Was that a man or a woman? Because he needs a haircut more than I do. Couldn't tell.
And all the little skinhead maggots just cheered. My God, if he'd have turned them loose, they would have ripped that man. There wouldn't have been a cell left connected to another cell.
Bob, they sound like Wolverines on a half-dead carcass. That sound is frightening.
It is frightening. It is frightening. They're dangerous. And they use that inherent threat to keep the rest of us from bringing the full force of peaceful resistance to bear. I mean, look at it. So the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians all said that, you know, we need our guns in case the government starts oppressing people. Well, they're kidnapping children at the border. Well, you got to obey the government because the government is ordained of God. That ain't what we was talking about, oppression. Oppression, it ain't oppression if it's happening to brown people who don't speak good English like I do.
That man is disgusting. It's such an affront.
You know, why should we expect the maggots to care about little brown babies coming from Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador, when they won't utter a peep when one of their own goes in and slaughters 17 American children in a goddamn school? Sorry, not yelling at you.
No, they don't listen. Like my I don't even know what to call him now. The guy that's up the street today at the store, the guy I've been talking to for like a couple of years now. Which I just can't discuss anything with him anymore. He's dead-eyed dick, you know. They do not care. They do not. They want what they want, and they do not care. You understand? The rabble thinks that they are in charge now. They have been brainwashed. They think they need to run shit. And you know what? And let me say this. And I just say this from someone who's been around a whole lot of white people only because of circumstance, and most black people, as you probably heard before, you know, as you move up in education and stature, blah, 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 you know, you find you're like the only black in the room all the time. I mean, that's just the way it is. But for some reason, white folks think that if they're outnumbered, that the other folks are going to persecute them the way they persecuted other people.
That's the very core of the whole thing.
But wait a minute. We don't think, I'm telling you, I talk with people. I talk with everybody. We don't, you know what? We just want to get along with life and not be fucked with and not be shot down in the goddamn street. Matter of fact, just leave us the fuck alone. Just let us live like you live. And see, I've lived in the suburbs. Let me tell you something. There's all kinds of shit going on in the suburbs, man. In these garages and the cul-de-sacs, there's more crime. It's just that the police don't, you know what happens when you're a kid and you're in the suburbs and you get in trouble? They fucking take you home. You don't get no record. If you live in the city, you're doing all you're doing in the corner. And you go to jail. It's real fucking simple. And I know this for a fact because I've been in the ghetto and I've been in the suburbs. I've been to board. You know me. Come on, man. I've had my feet in all kinds of different ponds. So I feel qualified to say what the fuck I'm saying. You know? Please. I've seen people just walk out the house with a quarter pound in their hand and just, hey, what's up? Boom. You know, like nothing to it. All out in the open. Dude on the corner in the ghetto, a nickel bag of weed, he's going to fucking jail. Anyway, yeah, So, you know, we have to do something. These people are out of control. And the doubling down. Oh, and did you hear this commercial? It's a new commercial.
Her name is Sarah, the queen of super.
Brought to you by Merck Pharmaceuticals. Excessive lies. I couldn't finish it.
I understand. Hey, Todd, we got to get out of here, brother. Hopefully, we'll talk. Next week. I'll let you know how the ribs were received, man. Six slabs and two butts.
Damn. Six. Wow. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I know you got to go. Wait. I had to go to the terrible store the other day. I had no choice. You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they had a charbroil out that it looked just like yours. All right.
You sure it wasn't the char griller? Sure it wasn't the acorn?
It was not it looked like the acorn. And I opened it up and it was tinny. It was no ceramic.
Oh, if charbroil makes it, I won't own it.
No, and listen, and now I got an old charbroil, it's okay, but you know, they have changed. They have really had. But, and it didn't even have any, I'm going to tell you, this is one thing you know to stay away from is cheap. Like, in other words, like when you get a group grill, it's got the restaurant quality grates on it.
Yeah.
You know, heavy, you know, cast, right. This had little wire grates on it, and it was $250-something.
No.
If you're going to spend that much, you may as well get an acorn.
Well, yeah, you're going to get the acorn or spend $150 if you're not cooking for a bunch of people. Spend $150 and get the acorn junior.
Well,
it's not on wheels or anything, but it's got three legs and it'll sit on a tabletop.
I wish you could have tasted my last creation. Everybody, man. This wood, I've had it now. It's all kiln dried and kind of aged, man. You can when you hit it with a hammer, each one of these logs has a different note. Like one is D, one is E, one is C. And I mean, this stuff burns like I hate to say it, but it burns. You know, burns it has a lot of energy in it. It burns like coal. But this last batch, oh my God, flavor! And I got this. I got a new rub recipe I'm using. Man, this shit is off the chain. I mean, but you know what? Shit gets in your skin, man. You get in the shower and smell like a damn. No wonder the dog is trying to lick. You know. Lick
oh no, no. Agnes says if they could figure out a way to work a little hickory smoke into a men's cologne, it would there wouldn't be any unmarried men.
That's beautiful. All right, man. I know you gotta go.
I do,
and I gotta go. But yeah. So anyway, everybody's glad that you were back tonight. And you know, I'm waiting for Jim to apologize for breaking the rules. You know, Jim in West Virginia.
What Jim did?
He broke the rules. He said where I live, man. I ain't asking him to say that.
Oh, okay.
And he walked all over you. You know what I mean? He's supposed to be like all genteel and everything, but you know, I talk a lot of shit, I curse, but I don't break the rules.
No, I didn't really have any rules, but I didn't think about that. I didn't notice it, but yes, we'll keep it to South Carolina, Stan.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
Todd, take care of yourself. Barbecue something good this week. Tell me about it next.
Gotcha.
All right, later, man. Bye now. And that's our buddy Todd, and that's the end of the program. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very, very much indeed to Henry and to Darcy for jumping in this evening. That knocked us down by $60. And, well, I guess we'll leave it to the podcast crew to see if we can get any help along the way so that we can not just be covered up come next Monday. But thanks, everybody. Thanks, one and all. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room this evening. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you. to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air, and thanks to all of you who share in your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Catch you Monday. Hopefully, we'll all still be here. Later.